Well, hello, everyone. I'm James Dobson, and you're listening to Family Talk, a listener-supported ministry. In fact, thank you so much for being part of that support for James Dobson Family Institute.
Scripture repeatedly commands us as believers to defend the powerless and oppressed and stand up for justice. And that calling has never been more appropriate than to address what is happening today in communist China. Every day, millions of babies are victims of what is known as gendercide, the killing of a preborn life simply because of the gender of the baby. Millions of babies are being senselessly murdered under this oppressive two-child policy that leads to gendercide, and this evil gendercide must not be tolerated. Hello, everyone. I'm Roger Marsh, and this is a special edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. In just a moment, you're going to hear Dr. Tim Clinton's conversation with Reggie Littlejohn, founder of Women's Rights Without Frontiers. They'll examine the horrific figures of gendercide in China before Reggie talks about the meaningful work her organization is doing. Now, before we begin, the discussion you're about to hear deals with a very disturbing and mature subject matter. So for that reason, parental discretion is strongly advised. Here now is Dr. Tim Clinton on this edition of Family Talk.
Reggie, thank you for stopping by Family Talk, and we're in Washington, D.C., National Right to Life March going on, and it's been an amazing time. I don't know what you've sensed, but I've been pretty blown away at the energy, and I think the progressive nature of what's happening with this movement. There's an uprising going on. There's a stirring going on. It seems like they're really starting to win at a very significant level. Are you seeing that?
Oh, absolutely. And I think it was a huge shot in the arm that President Trump came and spoke at the March for Life yesterday.
Yeah, that was stunning.
So the thing that's really interesting about this is that the pro-life movement is really capturing the heart of the youth, and so that the so-called feminists are finding themselves to be sort of the elder ones and the ones who are just kind of almost on their way out, because it's the youth that are really carrying this movement forward, and that gives a lot of hope to the movement.
You've been pretty active in this movement. You're founder and president of Women's Rights Without Frontiers. We're going to talk about that. It's an international coalition, again, to expose and oppose forced abortion, gendercide, and sex slavery in China in particular. We're going to talk a lot about China today, but everybody's got a story. Everybody's got a little narrative, and I was reading about you, and I was fascinated with it. You've got a lot of personality. You've got a little spunk to you, and I think that's probably why God's placed you in a unique place. But let's go back a little bit. Let's do this. Tell us a little bit about what's going on in your ministry, your efforts, and then we'll talk about your personal story.
All right. So what's going on right now is our organization is leading the movement to end forced abortion and the sex selective abortion of baby girls in China. And we're also posed to expand to India. We're hoping to do that. But that's for this year and next year. We also save abandoned widows that are just suffering and committing suicide, actually, in rural China. We are the only organization in the world that has boots on the ground inside of China that is actively saving baby girls from sex-selective abortion and abandoned widows from complete hopelessness. That's what makes us really unique. And I also have an international advocacy campaign. I have testified 8 times at the U.S. Congress and all over the world.
I was amazed at the places you've given testimony. It's stunning. And you're moving the needle. This isn't like something that you're talking about. I mean, you're getting stuff done. That's what's so impressive.
Right. So the thing that I am really grateful to God about is that we have been able to actually save hundreds of baby girls in China from sex selective abortion. And we have more widows because there are so many abandoned widows. But also in terms of moving the needle, when China moved from a one-child policy to a two-child policy, one of the reasons they gave was international criticism. Really? Against them because of the one-child policy, and being one of the ones who's been the most vocal critic against the one-child policy and the atrocities, we felt very vindicated and affirmed in our international advocacy. And I just want to say to the listeners, it's really important for people to understand, forced abortion is continuing in China under the two-child policy. So the way that this was announced was that China abandons the one-child policy as though what they were doing was abandoning all coercive population control. That's not true. What is true is that the new rule is that every couple is allowed to have two children, which means if you're not a member of a couple, if you're a single mom, you can still be forcibly aborted, and third children are still forcibly aborted. And I can give a couple of examples of that since the institution of the two-child policy. So that battle is not over.
I want to introduce our audience to you. I was thinking as I was looking over everything that you've got going on and the voice God's given to you, this is a unique person, and there's got to be some stuff in there that really drives her. And I went back, and I'll start about age 16. You announced to your mom and dad that you're an atheist. I mean, and every
yes.
parent is like, what? But take us back there. There was something going on that was birthed down inside of you. You were battling. You were doing something.
Well, when I was a really little kid, I was absolutely a believer. And I remember looking through the sort of dimpled glass on the bathroom window one morning and seeing the sun shine through and seeing it break into the spectrum of the rainbow and just thinking, there's got to be a God. You know, but then when I was 16 years old, I was, you know, pretty rebellious. I don't know if you can possibly imagine that.
I have a friend who said teenagers are crazy. You know, I mean, but it's a phase of life where you're trying to figure it all out.
Yeah.
How do I fit in this big world?
So I figured the biggest way that I could rebel against my parents was to declare my atheism, and which I did. And I said, I'm an atheist. I'm not going to church with you anymore. And they just, you know, sat there kind of stunned. I actually wrote them a letter, which I had my father read out loud. And so then they didn't force me to go to church. So I became an atheist. And I was the kind of atheist that would stay up with you till 3 a.m. arguing that there is no God. You know, I was a belligerent atheist.
Somehow I've got a feeling that I can see that in you.
So then I went to college, and in college, as a part of a college course on ancient literature, I had to read the Gospel of John as, you know, part of ancient literature. Yeah. And I'd never read the Gospel of John before. I never read hardly any scripture before. I don't remember ever cracking a Bible when I was growing up. When I was reading the Gospel of John, I became captivated by the person of Jesus. And just, he just seemed like an extremely captivating person, and I just thought to myself, this is not what I rejected. I mean, this is not what I rejected. So I moved from being an atheist to being an agnostic, all right? Mm-hmm. Then when I met my future husband and just fell head over heels in love with him, and I just remember looking into his eyes and just thinking to myself, I cannot accept that the only explanation for this man is that he evolved from blue-green algae. You know, there is something here that is transcendent. Mm. So then I became a deist. And then we traveled around the world, and I worked with Mother Teresa.
I thought that was fascinating. You spent some time with her that really
Six
influenced
weeks,
you.
And she really was trying to get me to join her order. The only reason I didn't join her order is because I was married. If I hadn't been married, I probably would have joined her order, and I would have had a very different life. A wonderful life, but very different life. Mm. But when I worked with Mother Teresa, and we worked with her for 6 weeks, and she happened to be in Calcutta the entire time we were
really?
There, yeah, I became a Christian. I returned to the Christian church. I'd been raised Catholic, and I went to a Catholic church working with her. And I can't even explain it, but in that church, and I believe I was the only person in the church, I just felt this, like, return of innocence. That's you know, because I'd become such a jaded person and so sarcastic and so, you know, just the way you are, the way I was when I was an atheist, jaundiced. Yeah. And just in that church, there was like this ray of innocence that came back to me, and it reconnected to me to that little girl looking out the window and seeing the little dimpled sunlight coming out as rainbows.
Mm. Where you met the Christ of the Gospel of John.
Yeah.
Yes. And a beauty began to radiate inside of you.
Right.
And you took off. And by the way, you went to Yale Law School, became
right.
a litigator.
Right.
Got involved in all kinds of work. And then some things happened in your life. Your family, there's some breast cancer in there. And you went through an experience that really even moved you to a new place, which birthed a mission in you. Do you mind sharing some of what happened there?
So as an attorney, as a litigator, I was a complex commercial and intellectual property litigator, but on a pro bono basis, I represented a couple of Chinese refugees in their cases for political asylum in the United
wow.
States. And the first refugee was someone who had been forcibly sterilized and persecuted as a Christian. So this was the mid-90s. And at that time, I knew that China had a one-child policy. I'd never stopped to think how it was enforced. And this woman, who was tiny, she was maybe 5 feet tall, maybe weighed 100 pounds, and just looked like a China doll, they literally dragged her out of her home, screaming and crying and pleading, and held her down to a table and cut her open and tied her fallopian tubes without anesthesia.
Ah.
She said it felt like somebody was taking a blowtorch inside of her. She said the pain was indescribable. And then sure enough, she ended up with a massive infection, which caused chronic back pain, chronic abdominal pain, and chronic migraines for the rest of her life. And this is what revealed to me that the coercive enforcement of the one-child policy, some other things happened. Like, at that time in my life, my goal was to become partner. I wanted to be a partner in a law firm. And when I was thinking about my future, it was like, I'm going to be a partner.
Every attorney's dream.
Yeah, every attorney's dream. My thought was, I'm going to be a partner in a law firm, and I'm going to supervise associates, and they're going to do, you know, political asylum work, right?
Yeah.
And God had a different plan for me, which is that we discovered these breast lumps, and because of my family history of breast cancer, I was advised and I decided to have something called prophylactic mastectomies, which is where you have your breast removed, not because you have a diagnosis of cancer, but because you have an issue that is undiagnosable. I had like 21 lumps. The doctor said, I can't biopsy 21 lumps. Anyway, it was a good thing I did this because what I had was lobular carcinoma in situ, which is a form of cancer, but it's not invasive yet. It's like pre-invasive cancer. So if I had not done that, I would have gotten breast cancer. I did that in order to sort of spare my life from breast cancer, but unfortunately, at the same time, I got one of these MRSA infections, and so that instead of the 2 months off that you would expect from having mastectomies, I ended up being like completely knocked off my horse and was disabled for 5 years because of that infection.
5 years.
Yeah. And so I went overnight from being somebody who was a high-powered litigation attorney to somebody who was flat on my back, you know, just begging God to spare my life. And I prayed to God, you know, if you spare my life, I ask that you would make it to have some meaning, because I can't even tell you the number of times I would pulling all-nighters at this law firm fighting on behalf of some big company, and the whole thing that was at issue was just money. And I would think to myself, gosh, I wish I could be pouring this kind of energy into something that would actually mean something in the world, that would be, you know, important, to save lives, to save souls, to save anything, you know. And I prayed to God. I said, please, Lord, break my heart for whatever breaks your heart. And he immediately broke my heart for the women in China and the babies in China who were being forcibly aborted at that moment. And that was the birth of our efforts to save the women and the babies in China.
It's amazing how God works. Amazing. Yeah. China, let's go there. For a lot of Americans, China's over there. But we hear a lot of stories about China. What do you love about China? How did God, or what did he do in your heart toward the people of China?
When you say China, there's kind of two things you're referring to. One is the Chinese Communist Party, which is oppressing the people of China. So I can't think of anything I love about the Chinese Communist Party. I mean, they have killed hundreds of millions of their own people, and that is the hallmark of communism, is the peacetime killing of your own population.
Yeah.
So through the one-child policy, they have eliminated over 400 million lives. But the people of China are very oppressed. The women of China, all they want to do is just to mind their own business and have children and love children. You know, the traditional Chinese culture is very affirming of children. In the countryside, people would have huge families, and everybody loved children. And so then the women and the men are just having their hearts ripped out by this forced abortion that's happening over there.
In that narrative that's unfolding in your life, and you seeing what's going on over there, this preparation from law school to understanding the international rights issue, challenges for women, et cetera, and knowing what you've gone through, you can see how the passion begins to surge inside of you and where you're going. The whole human rights violation and more. Talk to us about how it becomes really significant for you and how you begin to communicate that as something significant that we here stateside and around the world need to understand. Why does this really become important to us? How do we absorb this? Because that's one of the things I want to help people understand. We got to have conversation with purpose. You know, not just, let's just hear about China. It's like somebody, missionary coming into the old church and showing these pictures, and we would leave church and I'm like, what was that about? You know, I mean, no, there's something going on here that's important. This becomes inherently personal for all of us.
Okay, there's two answers to this question. Number one is, if we love God, we need to care about what God cares about.
That's right.
And God doesn't just care about Americans. God cares about the whole world. And God cares about China and the people of China who are living in probably the second most repressive regime in the world, number one being North Korea. And especially the Christians in China are being terribly persecuted. And this is breaking God's heart. Remember my prayer, God, break my heart for whatever breaks your heart. Of course, abortion in America breaks God's heart. But you know what? Abortion in China also breaks his heart. And in the United States, we've had about 60 million abortions since the Roe v. Wade decision. Now, a long time ago, like maybe 10 years ago, the Chinese government stated that they had prevented 400 million lives through the one-child policy. I bet you anything it's 500 million by now, half a billion people. This breaks God's heart. And if we love God, we've got to care about the Chinese people. Now, another difference between the United States and China is that in the United States, we have freedom of speech. So you're here for the March for Life, right? How many fantastic American speakers are there that are really speaking out powerfully about any aspect of abortion in the United States? You say something against the one-child policy in China or the two-child policy or coercive population control, and you are going to be jailed, you are going to be tortured, your family's going to be persecuted. They don't have freedom of speech. So people say to me, well, why don't you care about abortion in America? Of course I care about it. But you know what? For me, for every person who's speaking about forced abortion in China, there's 1,000 who are speaking about abortion in America.
Yeah.
Besides the fact that we're talking about elective abortion here and forced abortion there.
You're listening to Family Talk, a production of the Dr. James Dobson Family Institute. I'm your host, Dr. Tim Clinton, president of the American Association of Christian Counselors and executive director of the James Dobson Family Institute. Thanks for joining us. And by the way, thanks for supporting us. Find out more about what's happening at Family Talk and with Dr. Dobson and our team at drjamesdobson.org, drjamesdobson.org. I'm speaking today with Reggie Littlejohn. She's a pro-life activist and president of Women's Right Without Frontiers. And it's an amazing story. We're going to talk more about China and the calling and mission that God's put in her heart. It's stunning what's happening. It's important that we learn about this. And by the way, step into this moment. Get involved. Let's raise a generation who learns to care about the world and more. Reggie, I'm going to go back to three words related to your international coalition. I think are really important. Your goal is to expose and oppose forced abortion. Tell us what's happening in terms of forced abortion again. Clearly what's happening in China.
Under the two-child policy, every couple is allowed to have two children. So single women are still subject to forced abortion, and third children are still subject to forced abortion. That's one kind of forced abortion. That's government forced abortion. So, I mean, just as an example, a woman who is a Uyghur, she was living in China, but she married somebody from over the border. They're allowed to have three children. She was living with her husband. She was pregnant with her third child. She went back to China to give up her Chinese citizenship because she wanted to become a citizen of the Uyghur nation in East Turkmenistan. She comes over the border and the Chinese government says, "You're pregnant with your third child." She says, "Yeah, but I don't live here. I'm giving up my citizenship. I'm going back." And they said, "You have a third child." And they forcibly aborted her third child.
Wow.
So that's government-enforced abortion. Now, the second kind of forced abortion is enforced by the family. So this is the where the gender side comes in.
Yeah, gender side being the second key issue that you guys really focus on. What's happening in China here?
Right. So this gender side is another species of forced abortion, because these women are being forced to abort baby girls when they don't want to. But they're not being forced by the government. They're being forced by their families. So, for example, there was a couple that had their one child under the one-child policy. It was a girl. So they were one and done. Then China moved to a two-child policy. And the husband said, oh, great, let's have a second child. Let's have a boy. And he forced his wife to abort four baby girls in a year, and she died. That's forced abortion by the family, not the government.
Wow.
So even under the two-child policy, especially second daughters are still at very high risk, because there is brutal son preference in China and elsewhere. China's not the only country that has son preference. China is the only country that has this low coercive birth limit of two. So if a couple has a girl for the first baby, they're more or less, you know, let her live, because they can have a boy on the second baby. And then many couples will just abort again and again and again until they get that boy and the second child.
The sex slavery issue. Address that for us, too. Help us understand how that fits into your work with this international coalition, and why it's significant to this discussion.
Because of the sex selective abortion of baby girls, there's an estimated 30 to 40 million more men living in China than women. And because of this extreme gender imbalance, China is a major country that is trafficking women from all the surrounding, most of the surrounding nations, into China to be forced brides and sex slaves.
It's horrifying when you really think about what's going on.
So there's something every year that the U.S. government puts out. It's called the Trafficking in Persons Report, the TIP report. And then in the TIP report for 2019, China was demoted to the lowest level. That's a tier three nation, because they actually supply women to other countries, or women trafficked out of China to other countries, and also a major destination of trafficking. And the government is not reaching international standards to do anything about it. And I believe, this is my opinion, I believe the reason the government is not doing as much as they should be doing about it to stop it is that they know they've got these 30 to 40 million excess males, and if they don't have trafficked women, they're going to have insurrection on their hands. So I believe that they are complicit with it.
Wow. You know, for most Americans, they're introduction to or knowledge of sex slavery is the movie Taken or something. You know, they're watching that, and it terrifies them, and they don't want to go to Mexico or something like that. But they have no idea what's happening around the globe. And when you come into a place like China, it's beyond the pale, isn't it?
Well, in the most recent, there's something called the Congressional Executive Commission on China, and they issue a human rights report every year. Their human rights report came out January 9th, just very recently. And in that human rights report, they said that there are cases of women in foreign countries who are pregnant, who are coming to China to have their babies, to sell their babies in China. That's how desperate the situation is.
Really?
And they mentioned Vietnam as being a particular nation where pregnant women will come to China to have their babies and sell their babies on the black market.
There would probably be, for some who are listening, like, you're kidding me. How could you even possibly begin to make a difference in China? Yet God is at work. God's doing things. Efforts like what you're doing through Women's Rights Without Frontiers, that story is to be told. And by the way, who knows who may raise up the next Reggie Littlejohn to step into China, who may be listening to a broadcast. When we come back, Reggie, I want to ask you to stay. I want to do another program with you, because what's amazing here is this narrative of God being at work is so true. And so would you stay with us and join us for our next broadcast? We'd love to have you.
Yes, I would be honored.
What a fascinating program. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Powerful program about the outrageous and evil practice of forced abortion happening in China right now. Be sure to listen in again to tomorrow's broadcast for the conclusion of Dr. Tim Clinton's interview with Reggie Littlejohn. In the meantime, visit today's broadcast page at drjamesdobson.org for more information about Reggie Littlejohn's organization, Women's Rights Without Frontiers. You can see and read about the impact this group is having on our world. That's drjamesdobson.org, and then tap onto the broadcast icon at the top of the page. Well, that's all the time we have for today. Be sure to join us again next time as Reggie Littlejohn shares the progress being made to save oppressed lives in China. I'm Roger Marsh, and I hope you'll join us again tomorrow for another edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
This has been a presentation of the Dr. James Dobson Family Institute.
Hey everyone, Dr. Tim Clinton here for Family Talk. Do you like Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk? Go to our Facebook page, will you, and tell us. You can sign up at drjamesdobson.org, and every day you're going to see threads on issues that matter most to your family. See what's playing on the broadcast, dialogue on topics of faith and family, and find encouragement for your daily life. That and much more at the Family Talk Facebook page. Join the conversation, drjamesdobson.org.